I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
What do those words mean to you? To me, they say, thank you, America, for your strength, for your courage, and for our freedom, which has been a beacon to the world for 200 years.
Of the United States of America.
Good evening, and welcome. It must be 6 o'clock on Sunday night. And welcome once again to Vance's Vision for America. It's good to be back. Had a little bout with the flu, and I also had to accomplish a little business in the Big Easy, so got all of that done. Feel a little better. If I do cough once or twice during the show, I apologize up front, but great to be back in the seat with so much going on in the world. Most of it is not very good as far as America is concerned. But we look forward to discussing some of the issues of the day. Hopefully you can jump on with us. If you have an interest in joining us on the show, the number is 1-347-857-1380. Again, that's 1-347-857-1380. And all I can say is, wow, is there just unbelievable things going on in the world today. But, you know, I want to throw a little change in here to start with. We're so involved with all the bad information, bad news, terrible tragedies and that are going on. I just wanted to take a minute or two here to talk about this time of year, one of the greatest times of the year, spring, where spring hopes eternal for baseball, for spring training. We're in the middle of spring training. We're getting ready to kick off the season, so every team's still got a chance to be in the World Series. It's great if you're a baseball fan this time of year, especially great for a little bit of a pop for the economy on in Florida and also Arizona, so that's a great thing. The NBA is coming to an end, and there'll be playoffs here soon. So if you're a basketball aficionado, you definitely are interested in that. Same with hockey. So sports-wise, there's a lot going on. Hockey's getting ready to start their playoffs. The weather has just been incredible down here in the South, so playing golf, getting out with the guys, and that has been just, the weather's been tremendous. So with that said, the last, I think, and one of the things that's become one of the most watched and most interesting sporting events, the NCAA finals, used to be 64 teams, now 68, kind of gives people a chance to follow that, you know, and nothing but excitement. The tournament's lived up to its billing. There's been absolutely tremendous games, buzzer beaters, controversy, some upsets, a lot of excitement going on. So it's just a great time of year for sports. It's just a great time of year weather-wise, and you know, I thought it was apropos to start the show with a little positive note. So if you're with me on that, let me know. You know, it is just a great time of the year for sports and being outdoors here. So without any further ado, let's get into the politics. I might go back a few items here, but there's been so much going on here in the United States, in the Middle East. Unfortunately, Japan's unbelievable scenario. Our hopes and prayers go out for the people of Japan between the earthquake, the tsunami and the radiation from the nuclear power plants has really been in the forefront, and we just hope that it's going to get better for the Japanese people. Some of the things I've watched, I'm pretty impressed with the Japanese people for the way they've handled this situation in a very orderly process. You know, we get a lot of mixed emotions, the sensationalism of the press, you know, it's hard to know exactly what's going on and how severe the radiation situation is. I do believe, let's not kid ourselves, you know, when you're dealing with energy, any kind of energy, there's a risk involved. Without a risk, we just wouldn't be able to power this United States or the world. Nuclear, natural gas, the oil, you know, those things there comes with a risk. The coal miners going in and getting our coal. But, you know, one of the things about the United States is that nuclear power represents about 45% of our energy, 45%. And I know the administration came out the other day and said that at this time they had no reason to mess with the progress on nuclear energy in this country because, you know, not because of what's happened in Japan. Well, I got to believe with every other thing that they've done in the energy issues, there is no way that they're not going to do something to slow down the progress of nuclear power in this country. Look at the way they've handcuffed our country, our economy, with the moratorium on the oil drilling. Just anybody with a half a brain knows that we need to be drilling for oil, whether we like it or not. You've got your people on the left, your environmentalists, and you know they want to ride a bike to work. That's fine for them, but this country needs to run on fossil fuels. You can do what you want with windmills. You can do what you want with some of the other innovations and biofuels and stuff, but it's such a small, minute amount of the power that we need to run this country. That let's stop kidding each other. Let's stop putting the roadblocks up. Oil is so important to this country, and I was very fortunate to, I do have a family member that I confide in quite a bit that's involved somewhat in the oil industry. And, you know, of course, if you want to get the truth in that, you want to go to the source. So had the opportunity to have a nice chat and, basically, you know, as everybody probably aware, there's been one permit for offshore drilling in the last 300-something days. So that one went to Noble Energy, which I think has some connection to BP. I'm not exactly sure, which, boy, that's kind of strange. After they lambasted BP for the oil spill, BP was going to pay for this, and BP didn't do that right. And, of course, it was an excuse for an administration that don't want oil drilling to postpone it. One of the funny things about it is that one permit will probably never see the day of light with all the red tapes that's to follow, with all the studies and that company will have to go through to use that permit. But what I was told, and, you know, we always get the story out here that, you know, if we did decide to drill, it'd take 5-10 years to be up and running. Well, from an inside source, that's hardly the case. That's what this administration and the left want you to believe. But I think it's absolutely positively going to happen a lot quicker if we take the handcuffs off the oil industry, help our employment situation by putting people to work. We have oil situations in North Dakota. We've got it out in the Gulf. We've got natural gas abundance. We've got ANWR. We need to drill for oil. If anybody's awake in the White House, we need to drill for oil. The price of oil that continues to go up, the uncertainty in the Middle East, is playing havoc with the very small, minute improvement in the economy here. So if you look at that situation, oil prices are probably going, I mean, they've kind of stable a little bit, but they're going to go. We're going to pay over $4 a gallon. We're going to be in a mess, as I'll get to in a little while. But the sources over there, with some of the uneasiness and some of the countries that we are dependent on a lot for oil, if they go under, we're going to be in deep trouble. And this economy will not be able to stand it. We'll go backwards again. And I just, for the life of me, can't understand why somebody in this administration doesn't get it and doesn't take the shackles off for the oil industry so that we can, as a country, start to drill and stop our dependency on a very, very unstable situation in the Middle East. I think the handwriting's on the wall. I think that the administration is nowhere to be found on this issue. And to be very honest with you, it's driving me absolutely bonkers to think that this is the way we're going to go. Depend on that. So let's move right along. One of the things I do, one of my segments, is buzzwords. But buzzwords and phrases used in the government. Well, I was going to say today, and a word that's come up quite a bit, is recall. You know the situation in Wisconsin where Governor Walker is trying to do his best to balance the budget. You know the situation in Ohio and some of the other states. But if I remember correctly, the Democrats, because they lost the last election, it was a mandate by the American people to clean up this mess, this financial disaster that each state is now under. And the states are mandated by law to balance their budgets. The federal government doesn't have to do it, and that's obvious, because they keep spending like drunken sailors and just pass kicking a can down the road for the next generation to have to suffer. But it's amazing how all the Democratic senators left the state, went into Illinois to stop the process. And so the Republicans came up with a decision to drop the financial part of the bill and go ahead and deal with the benefit part. I'm going to get to a section here that will drive you crazy if you're on the right. I know the left doesn't want you to notice, but we'll get to that in a minute. You can't negotiate with a party that is owned by the unions and continue to give them sweetheart deals on pensions and benefits. It just physically and financially cannot happen. So here we go. We get a governor, goes in, he's going to tackle the problem head on, and he opened the Pandora's box, and all the freebies, they come out in droves. They don't want to have anything gone. You know, when you look about how the public the public sector gets their benefits against the private sector, it's well known that they're paid a lot more. And when this economy went south, the private sector took it in the shorts. Everybody had a lot of jobs were lost. A lot of benefits were lost. But the government workers and the state workers and that, nothing happened. So the governor asked them to kick in. and just pay their fair share. And, you know, they went out there, they protested, they rallied. They brought the kids because they closed down the schools because the teachers went to the rally. And one of the things that I remember was one of the situations in the protest, the teacher was up there lambasting the governor and saying that the governor did not have college education and he probably wished he did. And I don't know, maybe he does. Everybody likes to further their education. But when I look at it and I see how articulate and how well polished that Governor Walker is, the problems, he's been very eloquent. He's tried his very best to not have to lay off or let any employees go in this time of economic woes. But he did look for a small concession, and what he was adding, asking for the world. Well, so this teacher, who is probably college educated, didn't sound real good to me because a lot of these teachers lied, got false documents to take their day off, misled the children. It looks to me like maybe a college education is a little overblown. Mr. Walker sure impresses me, and I support him 100% in his endeavor to curb the spending in one of the most liberal states in the United States. And as you all know, it carried over to Governor Kasich trying to do the same thing in Ohio, trying to stop the bleeding of businesses leaving and college graduates having to go to other states to get a job because there's no jobs to be had. It's truly amazing when all the Democrats were running the show, it was business as usual. And business as usual is kicking the can down the road financially because of their relationship with the unions. And now you have some Republicans in there that are going to do the right thing. They are not union busting. They're just telling the unions that the you know, this free ride is over, and somebody's got to come up with some kind of help for the government to balance. I mean, the states to balance their budget. But I got a piece of information from a good friend of mine, and this might be pretty interesting. I'm going to walk it up through. It won't take too long. But this is a little study on political campaign contributions by unions from 1990 to 2010. And union leaders have proclaimed that they own the Democratic Party. I see what they mean. Actually, it might be a joint ownership thing since the Trial Lawyers Association claim ownership of the Democratic Party as well. But here's some pretty startling numbers. Campaign contributing unions from 1990 to 2010. If you have any questions as to why the Democrat elected officials are so protective of their beloved unions, let me give you this information. American federal, state, county, and municipal employees over this period have donated over 40 million to the Democrats and 500,000 to the Republicans. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers have donated over $29 million to the Democrats, $679,000 to the Republicans. National Education Association, the teachers of our young children, over $27 million to the Democrats, $2 million to the Republicans. Service Employees International Union, $26 million to Democrats, $98,000 to Republicans. Pretty fair shake. Communication Workers of America, $26 million, $125,000 to Republicans. Service, American Federation of Teachers, $25 million to Democrats, $200,000 Republicans. United Auto Workers, a couple of those companies that Mr. Obama owns, $25 million to the Democrats and $182,000 to the Republicans. That could be a reason why GM and Chrysler got bailed out. One of the other reasons that AIG got bailed out, a lot of people don't know that, of course, AIG held all the pension plans for the government and union workers, so you definitely had to keep that in. Teamsters Union, $24 million Democrat, $1.8 million Republicans, and so on and so on. AFL-CIO, $17 million Democrats, $713 million Republican. There's, and I can go on and on. The Postal Workers Union kind of strikes me as $11 million in Democrats, $500,000 in Republicans. So, as you can see, the state benefits for public employees are just absolutely being taken care of. It's been a vote getter. He's going to protect the voters. And now that the Republicans are in control and they're going to do the right thing, you can see why we're having all the protests and, you know, we're willing and we're able, but they're not going to stop spending at all. They're going to try to keep their things. They've got to keep their union dues. They've got to keep that going. It's an endless cycle. They pay the union dues and then they pay off the political establishment. So that's an uphill battle. And we didn't even talk about the trial lawyers with their part of the deal. So when you weigh all that together and you look at the states that have come under fire, if you look at this administration and lack of support for any of the states, you go back to Arizona when they had to do their own law to try to secure their borders and were fought tooth and nail by the federal government. Actually sued to try to get the bill down. Well, same thing happened in Wisconsin when the Republicans tried to do the right thing and balance the budget. The president came out and thought it might have been an attack on unions, and he was just going to protect his voting bloc, protect his buddies that he bailed out in the stimulus. It's you know, it's a real shame when the leaders of this country, whether they're there for 8 years, all they're concerned about once they get in is to keep their votes. How about doing the right thing for America? Wouldn't that be a breath of fresh air if the politicians would do the right thing for America? You look at the liberals that control the media, they control education, they've destroyed the education system in this country. I look at the Ivy League, the prestigious Ivy League, and all the liberal bias that comes out of the Ivy League. I look at the newspapers that are most of the suffering with that they're doing with their subscriptions is way off. It's all liberal-based. I mean, it's just, it's amazing how long America has had to listen to that one-way situation with the press dictating the business of the day. I think that's one of the reasons there's tea parties now, is because they finally have somebody to call them on the carpet with Fox News and talk radio. And conservatives are up in arms over the way that this has been controlled. And if we go back to one of my first shows, you know, the liberals just absolutely, whatever they said was gospel. Walter Cronkite used to come on, and you all sat at the table. Maybe you weren't happy, but you bantered a little bit. You went to bed, you get up, and you went to work because you had to feed your family and pay your mortgage. So when you've got an administration that's probably the most radically left socialist progressive administration ever in this country, and they're dictating policies and procedures to a minority of the American people, that's why everybody's up in arms, because he's just not being the president for all the American people. He's only taking care of his constituents and his agenda. And because it's a radical agenda that goes and makes only a small percentage of Americans happy, that's why the country is probably as divided as it is now. The underhanded backroom deals, the stimulus to take care of all the union people and the the people that voted for the Democrats, the health care bill, which is just a redistribution bill, again, you know, adding 30 million people to the health care system is not going to raise the cost of this law. I mean, anybody in his right mind, and anybody that probably went to a private school instead of a government-sponsored school could know that that doesn't fly. There is no way that that can happen. So just an amazing situation. I just can't believe that, you know, people will put up with this much longer. But, you know, the word that we talk about is recall. They want to recall Governor Walker. They want to recall the Republican senators. They want to recall John Kasich. As soon as the Democrats are not in control, everybody goes berserk. What about the 14 senators that left the state? Should they be recalled? I don't understand. I mean, if you look at the situation we're in, while we're recalling people, why don't we recall this administration? I thought I'd never say it, but this administration makes Jimmy Carter look like a hero. I mean, absolutely, we are no better on this ship. We've got a bunch of empty suits. We've got a bunch of Ivy Leaguers running decision-making that don't have a clue, other than maybe they might have book smarts, but they don't have any idea how to run this country. And it's got me to the breaking point of it's very, very hard to get up and listen to the nonsense, listen to the lack of leadership, listen to the picking and choosing, listen to the fact that we don't want to call it terror, listen to all of this negative stuff, which leads me, you know, when the Democrats didn't do a budget last year, I don't know, they didn't get around to it, or maybe the timing really wasn't too good to put that huge budget out right around election time. So they had the Democratic president, the Democratic Senate, the Democratic House, and for some reason just couldn't put a budget together. It's just kind of amazing. And they still got shellacked at the booths in November. So whether they would have put a budget in or not, I think leaves a lot to be desired. But again, they just decided you know, we're just not going to do that because this administration, led by Obama and Pelosi and Reid, and them, have absolutely no desire to follow the rules. It's just do as I say, not as I do. And if it doesn't fit their modus operandi, then they're just not going to do it. So here we are. We're like 5 months in. We're almost halfway through the budget with no budget. We've had two continuing resolutions short term, of which the Republican Party has mandated that they stop. I think the first one was a couple of billion, the next one was $4 billion. So about $6 billion in spending cuts for the extension of about 4 or 5 weeks of the budget. And then we have this clown, Representative Moran, who basically said that we were all racist. Just can't believe that this is how we're operating, trying to run a country with a budget like this. Well, again, go back to the fact that they control. They could do anything possibly that they wanted to do, put any budget in. Republicans couldn't stop a thing. So Where's the message in that, Mr. Moran? I mean, we ought to be very, very thankful with John Boehner and Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan, Rand Paul, people with a little sense and a little backbone that are going to do their very best against big obstacles, because we still have Harry Reid running the Senate, and you talk about a guy that's just totally out of touch, was very upset in budget cuts that the Texas poetry thing that comes once a year. You can't believe that might have to be out of the budget. Just I mean, absolutely nuts. Nancy Pelosi said the other day, we really don't have a money problem. We have a morality problem. Nancy's the one that said for every dollar that unemployment people spend with it, they put $2 in the economy. There's another wonderful observation on the math. I mean, if I could do math like that, I'd be way ahead of the game. So you got Governors Walker, you got Governor Kasich. You have a Governor Scott down here in Florida that's just getting lambasted for doing the right thing. It's truly amazing the character assassinations and some of the things that the guy's been in office for a couple of months. He has called some people on their situations. It looks like merit pay for teachers is going to be a major change. He's going to run it like a business. He told the government to take back their $2.4 billion on a high-speed rail boondoggle in Central Florida. I mean, you got to know that boondoggle would, yes, up front, we would have created some jobs. Absolutely. But at least he had the foresight to understand on the back end, we'd be paying for the rest of our lives because the ridership would not be there. It just doesn't make sense. And it would be a lot like Amtrak and the post office and everything else, where they run a shortfall every year. We've got to raise their postage. Whoa, we've got to raise the rate. Whoa, we need money. We need support. Anything that the government throws a bone out there for, you can bet your bottom dollar that the local state, which if you don't say exactly what this administration wants you to say, you'll either get sued or they'll just decide they don't like the law, they'll change it. Leaves a lot to be desired. Unbelievable stuff, just unbelievable situation now. And, you know, I want to talk about a couple other things now that, you know, this Japan situation, which is very, very devastating to the third largest economy in the world. It has played havoc with our economy, it's played havoc with the stock market, it's played havoc with commodities, it's created a lot of uncertainty. You still have thousands of people unaccounted for, and they did have a major rescue the other day, which was a miracle, I think, after that amount of time. They're dealing with the radiation. It looks to me like they're trying every avenue. I know that the United States sent over help, and other countries have sent over help. And they welcomed it with open arms. I believe they're a resilient country, and they will make it back. And I wish them nothing but speedy recovery. Very fortunate to hear from a friend of mine the other day that their son is safe, was working over in Japan and is safe, and currently back in the States for a short period of time until they can iron out that situation so he can go back. Great news there for anybody that lost a loved one, or like I said, our hearts and prayers go out for them. But I do believe, like all the other media, whatever the next situation is, the Japan thing unfortunately will go on the back burner. Other than the gloom and doom EPA people and environmentalists that are going to absolutely play on this nuclear power thing. You just watch what I'm telling you. As I mentioned earlier, if you think for 1 minute that they're not going to mess with nuclear power in this country, you have a thing coming, because it'll be the next thing. I think as far as I'm concerned, the only thing that this administration wants everybody to do is put a windmill in your backyard. Hope that will suffice for you, because we're not going to do oil. We're not going to do natural gas. We're not going to do coal. We're not going to do nuclear. They're going to do everything in their power to limit the production, limit. Of course, the liberals are great for living in the, you know, everything is just wonderful, rose-colored glasses. And I said earlier that with power comes risk. And I'd like to see the day when the average person goes to turn their lights on in the house, and they don't come on because we have no energy. I'd like to see if it matters if you're a Republican or a Democrat when you have no power for your lifestyle. Do you think at that point in time this administration would hear enough to change? And with that said, you know, as we, as time flies in our lives, we all know that, thinking about four more years of this administration would absolutely, unbelievably handcuff this country to the point, as I said in shows before, you won't even be able to recognize that we are America. The way that we've gone about things overseas, and I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes, but the just the values of America just don't seem to be, being addressed by this administration. The apology tours around the world, the bowing to the wrong people, the uncertainty in foreign policy, the absolute tip-offs of everything that we're possibly going to do scares me to death. And you know, unfortunately, I can't believe a word they say. And whenever the president says, here's the absolute truth about this, that scares me even more. Because there's been a lot of things that I think these people have had to mislead the American population to cover their backs. So wouldn't be a bit surprised if that finally gets to the forefront as we get closer to the election. But when you look at this, when you look at this administration, when you look at this president, the perception of this president, number one, perception, playing golf, televising his brackets, speeches every day. He was talking about bullies when the world was falling apart. Whether he just doesn't want to address these problems, whether he doesn't know how to address these problems, I don't know how to explain it, but I mean, the way that Egypt was handle was terrible. Okay, Mubarak, you need to leave. I always thought our situation with human rights and for countries to be free and democratic was our utmost importance. You told the guy to leave when the fire got on, but I guess for years we gave him $1.5 billion of our money every year. Supposedly, he kept most of it. The wages for some of the people were like $2 a day or $2 a week. I'm not quite sure. Hardly a standard of living. And the people rebelled, and there's still a lot of the jury's out on exactly why they rebelled. But here's America standing on the sideline, you know, just saying, well, you know, we told you to go. You got to do the right thing by your people. You got to listen to your people. Well, this administration never listened to the people. Majority of the people they didn't listen to. Majority of the people didn't want health care. So how can you tell Egypt, do as I say, not as I do? I mean, but again, the administration was nowhere to be found in Egypt, nowhere to be found initially with Tanzania. We've got problems in Yemen. We've got problems in Saudi Arabia. The Libya situation now is on the front page, and that took a backseat when Japan came, and that took the heat off. But here was another botched attempt by this administration. Muammar Gaddafi has been for years a dictator, a tyrant, and it looked like the Libyan people were looking to join the thing about getting freedom. And again, where's the American administration? Where's the American support? Nowhere to be found, because we're not going to do it by ourselves. We're going to go through the UN, and we're going to get a nation-building consensus. And we're going to show you what my brackets are first, but we'll get back to you on that. And as the people were crying for help to have a no-fly zone, we were nowhere to be found, still waiting and telling Gaddafi how much we disrespected the fact that what he was doing to his people. It seems to me that we were probably 2 or 3 weeks late on acting. And if they think for 1 minute that they can hide behind a nation-building coalition like France and the United Kingdom and the Arab nations and hide behind that, they're mistaken, because don't kid yourself. Whatever we do good is not going to be worth it. Whatever we do bad is going to be highlighted. So the American perception in the Middle East was, again, we let down the people. We supposedly stood for freedom, human rights, and when the people cried for help in Libya, we were busy trying to get a resolution. Now, as you see, and I think most people will agree that the actions that have taken place in the last couple of days with the air attacks were probably, when they'll tell you they finally got a resolution then, I think they were probably initiated when Gaddafi said to the people in Benghazi, I'll give you a little while to get out, we're going to start a cleansing process there in Benghazi. So I think that had more to do with the opportunity to maybe start a no-fly zone. Again, after much ado and a big delay and a stern speech from the president, he told the world that by no means will we have soldiers on the ground. By no means is it America that's really the bully here. By no means are we going to do this alone. We're going to do this with a coalition. And I'm surprised they didn't tell him how many shots were going to be fired before they decided to pull out. I mean, did they give them a drop-dead day of when America was going to be out of ammo? I guess, you know, that could possibly happen because we're broke and we're stretched so thin. But it really, really bothers me with that wishy-washiness and lack of support. You can hear the bumbling words of support for military and that, but the furthest thing from the truth as far as we're fighting a different kind of war here, and you've got to take the handcuffs off our military. I've got military family over in the Middle East right now, right in the action, and I need to know that they're getting all the support that they need. And I don't want to be told that no soldiers will hit the ground, and he's over there. I'd like to know that for sure, so I'd be prepared to listen. But as we get back, you know, think about the whole situation here and how bad it is. Could have been eased, some of this could have been avoided with a leader. We needed somebody to take charge. The people are looking for somebody to lead, and we don't have any leadership at all in this administration. I was told, or we were all led to believe when they made some of the changes in the White House, that they were going to be moving a little bit to the center. You know, my gig on, of course, when the Democrats lost, now Republicans have to compromise. Well, that's the furthest thing from the truth. But because the Democrats lost, you know, we have to compromise. The world, America, is looking for leadership in probably some of the most devastating times in our life. If you do not start an energy policy that's going to benefit this country and take our dependency off the Middle East for oil with all the uncertainty that it's obvious you're not going to fix, it's obvious that we are not well respected in that part of the world, and it's obvious that at some point in time a madman like Gaddafi or somebody else is blowing up wells, blowing up supply. Somebody might close the Suez Canal. We stand by while Iran does nukes, say not a word. The Iranian people look for help. We just turn the other cheek. I don't know. I just, where do we stand? Where do we stand as a country? We talk about all the, you know, because these people are not allies. Why would they want to be allies with us when we're not standing up for what we praise, you know, as freedom and human rights and humanitarian reasons? We're going to be, you know, we're not going to be the policemen of the world. We're not going to, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to just go out and hand out food and supplies? Are we just going to constantly empty American people from all these foreign countries because it's unsafe? Are we going to do anything for Japan? Do we have any money left to help Japan? With all of the things that have happened, all the devastating events, do we have any money to help Japan? Or is it going to be the public stepping up to the plate again? Can we as a country be involved in three different wars? Mr. Gaddafi said get ready for a long war. I mean, I don't think Mr. Gaddafi can put up much of a fight. I could be wrong, but I would believe that he's not going to go out gracefully. I don't believe he's going to fold the tent without putting on a show. And it looks like as the rebels were making progress because of our lack of involvement, they've kind of lost quite a few steps, and it looks like Mr. Gaddafi is getting a stronghold again. If that's the case, and then the world sees that he was able to get his country back in a relatively short period of time, what's that say about the big superpower, America? Can we accomplish anything anymore? Are we feared by anybody anymore? I know one of the things is that the president said we can't be everything to everybody anymore. We are not going to be the leader. You know, we just are not the industrialized nation we used to be. It's all about information now and service, and there's no manufacturing. All the jobs are going overseas, and we can't compete because of the amount of money we pay unions, and people are fighting Walmart's going to New York so they can protect the local person and make sure the prices stay inflated. Makes me dizzy, you know, and my situation here is we listen to Bernanke, who is nothing but an administrative puppet controlling the finances, basically, of the world. Quantitative easing 2, maybe quantitative easing 3. Everything's fine. There's no inflation. You got to be kidding me. And as I said in one of the other shows, did this guy ever go to a grocery store? Or has he ever stopped at a gas station and filled his tank up? I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, I could fill my tank for $40. The other day, it was $69. Kind of sounds like a little bit of inflation to me. And when the gas prices are as high as they are, food prices have to follow suit, because the food has to be transported to the stores. And with food being transported to the stores, transportation, they're paying fuel, the price is going to go up. And we haven't seen anything yet. I think you're going to see the meat industry. I think you're going to see produce. I think you're going to see all the wheats, all of the food areas, soybeans and wheat. Of course, our brilliant ethanol project that ruins cars and has hurt people eating in this country because of the putting the corn into the gas tank instead of into food. Just an unbelievable bundling of things, because it's the left's feel-good, environmentally sensitive. It's the biggest mistake, plus it's damaging engines. Another boondoggle by the government that we just We got to stop. It looks like, you know, the Republicans are coming on. They're getting the door open. Of course, most of you are aware of the NPR situation that was revealed, the skating interview that was exposed. And now the Republicans want to stop the funding for NPR. Don't believe we should be funding them. And it's very obvious it's a very left-leaning organization exposed in the sting operation, where the gentleman even said that they'd be better off without the federal funds. So, you know, those are steps in the right direction. $300 or $400 billion here, $300 or $400 billion there. Planned Parenthood, another one that we should not be using federal funds to pay for abortions. I think that's going to be exposed. I think the next one to be exposed will be the public broadcasting system. As I said to you earlier, the liberals have dominated the media for years and years, and now they're being exposed. You know, one of the government agencies came out and said that there was like $200 billion of overlap in numerous programs where nobody had oversight and nobody knew anything about whether the program was successful or not. 30 and 40 programs for the same thing, education and teaching and checking out on different government opportunities and handouts, overlap and overlap. We're so bloated at that point, but, you know, just keep spending the money. You know, they've kicked the can down the road so far. The people that have caused a lot of this are the finger pointers, and it's time to expose them. It's time to hold their feet to the fire and make them accountable. This country cannot continue to spend like we spend. It's just unbelievable. Somebody hear me when I tell you we're broke. We don't have the money. And by law, the states have to balance their budget. And the government's fighting them tooth and nail. I just don't understand what the plan is for this country other than to take us down to third world status. If that's what they want to do, why don't they come out and say it? I mean, it took them a long time to come out and say they were progressives. It took Pelosi to say, well, you've got to pass this bill so you can read it and see what's in it. Well, it's a shame that when it got passed, we found out what's in it. And there was another fast deal, $105 billion of pre-spent money to keep that health care law going so that it can be harder and harder to break that down by the Republicans. The Republicans need to continue to do the big fight. I need the Republicans to give me the strength to believe that we can save this and turn the ship around. And when I talk about this most of the time, I don't talk about me because most of that's passed me by and how much adjustments will happen in my lifetime, I don't know. But I've got kids and grandkids, and when my time is done, I want to know that the ship has been righted so they've got a fair shake out there. I mean, just all the things as we talk about it, education is going up. The cost of going to college is going up. The cost of beef is going up. The people are starving because they don't have the corn. We need leadership. We don't need a bunch of regulation. Take all the shackles off. Take the regulations off. Some people are easing a little bit on hiring, but that temporary tax cut was a mistake. It should have been a permanent tax cut. I think that the way of Wisconsin, I know a federal judge put a snap on what Governor Walker got through, typical left wing again, and they're going to fight that. But this administration had better start supporting these governors, better support the states, and get this country in the right frame of mind. I know that in the near future, you can forget about fixing anything because then we're in the old political season, and it'll be about lies, misleads, vote getting, character assassinations. You're going to be led to believe that this economy's on a roll. They'll fudge the numbers like they do. They'll change the way they report the numbers. You know, I look back at the president. He did that artificial, let me get a debt commission, and they put a Republican and a Democrat in charge. And how many months did they work and came out with some pretty harsh recommendations, both, and I give Mr. Erskine Bowles plenty of credit. He was very rough on the administration with his recommendations. And Mr. Simpson, with his wit in that, was very rough on his recommendations. They took a vote. Of course, the vote didn't pass. And that was the last you ever heard about the debt commission. Not one thing was taken into fruition. No help was come. We come to a budget requisition to do this budget, and the Democrats offer $4.5 billion on a $3.6 trillion budget. Are they insulting me? Are they insulting Republicans? People in America should stand up and take notice. You know, even the amount of money that the Republicans are now fighting for in the first year is minimal. It's just a drop in the bucket. It's a start. And if we can clean up some of this other outrageous spending, I think we could get on the right road. I very much look forward to Paul Ryan's Republican version of the next budget, because I'm led to believe there'll be some deep cuts. And if some of you were with me during my show, I think it might have been the first or second show, when I was talking back months ago that, you know, Social Security and Medicare all this has to be adjusted. I am willing to sacrifice a percentage. I am willing to step up to the plate and maybe add a year. But, you know, everybody's got to give. I think that they laughed at President Bush when he wanted to do privatization of Social Security. Something's got to change. There's an old adage that I learned years ago. If you keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you're getting. And every time they kick the can down, it's harder for people to deal with it. Everybody's all on board about making cuts until the cuts come in their pocket. Then there's no way they'll touch that, or there's no way the education. You know, and let's face it, it's all about the children. You'll hear that. That's one of the mantras. None of the money for education goes to the children. And there was a union leader that said that. He just said that. We're not in the business of worrying about the children. He's worried about getting his union dues so he can spend it on a Democrat to get his union members better benefits, you know, better pensions, better pay. Do you think for 1 minute class size had anything to do with a better education for children? It was just about hiring more teachers. It's a scam. I mean, back in my day, you had 30, 35 kids in a class, still learn because there was discipline. The money is just going to the top. It's all bloated, and the money never gets to the classroom. So this president's investment scheme in education's for the birds. You know what? It's great being back. Sorry for a little bit of that coughing. Still have a little touch of that flu. I just wanted to thank you all for listening. I want you to keep the faith. It's got to get better. It can't get any worse. Let's make sure we pray for the people in Japan that it can have the best possible outcome in this harrowing time. And one of the things that I always tell you is, you heard other people say, hug your kids at night. Well, hug your kids and apologize, because they're about to inherit an awful debt. It'll be probably the first time in history that they'll be left in worse shape than the generation before them. And be curious to see in the coming months how the tone of this country will change, if there'll be some leadership changes, if there'll be some take charge people. Please, you know, get with me, get out and vote, talk to your neighbors, make sure that this administration is a one-term administration, We need a bold, fresh face. We need new ideas. And everything, we need somebody to tell us the truth, because we're getting a bag of lies, and it's time for the American people to be treated with more respect. Have a great evening. Thanks very much for listening.